Welcome, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. This is the last session for the APR online study course fall cohort. And what we're going to do is focus on case problems tonight. We've got two great plans, really well put together plans, and we're going to look at those plans and figure out what's really good about how those plans are put, how those plans are done, and what may need some changes. What we want you to do is to sign in, as we do always. We want you to participate in these sessions. Please type your answer to this question. Have you done a case problem? Just say yes or no, or I'm planning on it, or whatever you'd like. Got a lot of yeses in there, and I don't see any planning on it. Okay, Carmen says not yet, and Carol Smith says not yet. Now, we're gonna, of course, Carol and Carmen, we're gonna make sure we encourage you to do a case problem, because we know this is a successful way to study for the examination. So I am joined by two, although right at this moment, one great APR facilitator, Joy Samsel. Welcome, Joy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm really happy that you're with us tonight. And Norita will be joining us momentarily. She said that she was going to be running a little bit late. She's actually on the call, but she has not dialed in just yet. So I'm actually going to send the telephone number and the code. She says she's calling in momentarily. So I'm going to go ahead and send that to Norita so that she can call. And there she is. Norita,
hello.
Welcome.
Sorry about that.
No problem. We're glad you made it. Better right at the beginning than never. I'm glad you're here.
Sure you bet.
Welcome, Norita. And actually, I want to spend just a moment chatting with both of you before we begin. I know, Joy, I think you got your APR, about a year ago? A year and a half ago?
2012.
And Norita, you've been, that's like 2 or 3 years ago, is that correct?
Yes, it was
2009.
Four years ago, exactly.
Excellent. Well, this is our last session, and we have several people on the call who are getting very close to, or they've either already been advanced through their readiness review, or they're just getting prepared at this moment to take the computer-based examination. Can you share, each one of you, I'd like you to share just your number one tip for what you think is most successful in terms of study practices for the APR? Joy, why don't you go first?
For me, it was really getting down the RPI process. I studied a great deal in the Cutliff and Center's Effective Public Relations, and also Ronald Smith's Strategic Planning for Public Relations. Those were very helpful. And then I made a bunch of flashcards, which I carried around in my purse, and whenever I was waiting for an appointment or sitting at a traffic light or waiting anywhere, I would pull out the flashcards and start quizzing myself on them. And then when I went in to do the examination, you're not allowed to take anything in with you, but they give you a dry erase sheet and a marker. And I went in and I did a data dump onto the sheet, with some things that I felt would help me focus during the examination on key elements of RPI and the seven C's and all those sorts of things. What is a goal and what is a what are the elements of a good objective, those sorts of things. And that way I could look at the sheet and jog my mind as I was working through all the different problems.
How big of a whiteboard did they give you?
It was just an 8.5 by 11 sheet of laminated cardboard or paper and then a dry erase pen. So you can't make large examples of communication charts or anything like that, but you can give yourself key stepping stones to trigger responses in your mind.
That's great. So you can write down some mnemonics or some memory aids to help you really focus on the material.
Yeah, and that's a good point is as you are studying, sometimes something will help you key in, whether it is a funny reference or a historical reference or something, to how the processes work. And I had a couple of those that I would mark down, and it just helped me remember processes.
Excellent. How about you, Norida?
What I would say, my biggest, most important tip for studying for the computer-based examination is know thyself. You need to know what kind of a test taker you are, what kind of a studier you are. Are you the type of person that gets nervous before tests? Are you the type of person that feels like you need to absorb a lot of information and then maybe have a cooling off period? I don't know. Different people are different. But Joy mentioned about the test facility and their policies. And I'll tell you what, it sounds like Joy's was a lot nicer than mine. Mine is like going through TSA. They do a wand over you. They don't let you take in so much as a Kleenex with you and empty your pockets. So if you're the type of person who gets nervous with tests, I recommend visiting the facility ahead of time. If you're the type of person that feels like you just can't remember things, I really like Joy's tips. I did flashcards for crisis communications and things like that, things that involve more in-depth steps than the 10-step process. So, like I said, the biggest thing is to you need to know what kind of a student you are.
Wow, that's great. Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Norita and Joy. And we're going to ask both of you to comment as we go through the communication planning process. And it would be helpful as well to sort of relate this back to the examination. You know, why is it important for us to be, although I think we have a readiness review practice in here this evening. Actually, let me bring in Gina and Lynn. Gina, you're doing actually a readiness review practice, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. And how about Lynn? Are you doing a readiness review practice, or is this a case problem to prepare yourself before you do a readiness review?
I would say the latter, though I'm hoping to use this case study in the readiness review.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. Well, that's great. Well, let's go ahead and continue on at this point. And I do want to just make sure there are some of you that are in this session that are thinking about joining the spring cohort session. And I really want to make sure that we're all on the same page, that The learning modules that you find online are really one aspect of the study. Obviously, there's reading that's involved in each of the modules, but we also do have these webcasts that you can attend, and they're really voluntary. The course is actually self-paced, but we do find that people like to come together in a webcast to review notes, to look at some short bookshelf of recommended texts, and then also to prepare a case problem as a way to really check your ability to strategically think through a communication problem in a very quick fashion, and then respond in a knowledgeable fashion. And then once you do a case problem, it's good for you to start thinking about your readiness review and include that. And I'm wondering if I can bring Norita and Joy back in for a moment to talk just a little bit about the readiness review process. There are some people that don't completely understand. We've got two steps for the examination. The first step is the readiness review. You get advanced from the readiness review, and essentially you get a code. And once you get that code, you can make your appointment for the computer-based examination. Can you, why don't I start with Norita this time and talk a little bit about the readiness review process. It's really a sort of a portfolio presentation of a case that, or of a communication plan that you're proud of. Is that correct? Was that a good characterization?
Yes, it's basically your opportunity to demonstrate how you the fact that you understand all of the sense of a plan by presenting a plan that you have either done, that you actually have done, or that you would do, and make a case for why your plan is solid according to all of the elements that are required as far as goals and objectives and strategies. And then you also are going to be prepared to answer questions about the elements of your plan, about why you made these certain decisions and why you outlined things a certain way, and also be prepared to answer questions to demonstrate your knowledge, skills, and abilities. So, yes, you're going to prepare a presentation for three panelists who are already accredited and who have gone through the process, who will review what you present orally and either pass or not pass you on to taking the computer-based examination.
And it's supposed to be a sort of a collegial experience. In other words, it's supposed to be a panel of your peers, essentially, who are saying, yes, you're ready to go forward with the examination process or not. Joy, can you comment a little bit about the readiness review process?
You're right. It is. It's very much a peer review, and you are... it's a discussion, and they may or may not have you do a PowerPoint presentation or slides or handouts. I did a binder for each presenter. They asked for a binder of background information and that they could review in advance, and then they brought up questions about why did you do something this way. If you had a bigger budget, or if you had a budget, because we had none, what would you have done? Those sort of things. And it is as you say, collegial. It's very much very wanting to understand where you sit in your knowledge and your skills and your abilities. And can you not only explain them in a focused manner to them, but can you use them
demonstrate
in the day-to-day practices of being a PR professional. It's one thing to be able to explain it, and it's another thing to be able to actually make it work.
That's great, Joy. And really, it is about demonstrating your ability. And that's one of the reasons that we recommend the study strategy of doing case problems. And it's really a process of using all of the KSAs, frankly, because you have to think about communication models and theories when you're doing a communication problem. The APR examination is based on communication problems. So it's solving quick communication problems, being able to respond quickly to those is a great skill to have. It's also important to look at the four-step process or the 10 components of a communication plan. And for the case problem presentation, you create a PowerPoint presentation, presentation to describe how you would respond. And you can send that to an APR facilitator for review and comment and share with other APR candidates in a conference just like this. So you go through the case problem process, the situation analysis, the audience identification, looking at the planning components, looking at the outcomes-based goals, the measurable objectives, usually focused on one audience. We don't communication plans can get very complex very quickly, and what we try to do in the communication the case problem approach is really just focus on one, perhaps two audiences, just to sort of see the entire process all the way through, and then looking sort of at strategy as you go forward. So submitting a case problem is to review the process of doing a case problem, selecting a case or making a case up, studying and preparing a response, creating your PowerPoint, making sure you look at the checklist, and then upload your PowerPoint, which can be a Word document as well, but it's easier for us if it's a PowerPoint presentation, and your checklist. And you do that through the group cohort area, but it's also one of the activities in Module 6. So we do want to make sure that you do that as you go forward. And you'll find all of the directions and all of the handouts on that case problem presentation page in the cohort area or also in Module 6. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to listen to Gina, I think, first. And we want you to listen actively, and many of you know exactly what we're talking about. We want you to type into the chat window whether you think the component that is being shared is well-formed. Could it use some improvement? How could it use some improvement? And this activity is going to keep you involved in a very high level with the communication process. So it's not just the presenter that's learning, but each one of you is going to learn from this experience. So with that, we want you to listen actively to the situation analysis, research goals, objectives, audiences, strategies, and the plan. So with that, I'm going to bring in Gina Bloom. Gina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Why don't you go ahead and share your background just briefly, and then go launch right into your plan.
Sure. Good evening. My name is Gina Bloom, and I am the Public Relations Coordinator at the Monroe County Public Library. I'm presenting a communications plan for my readiness review. The situation is Monroe Township, a suburban town in central New Jersey, has experienced robust growth compared to county and state rates, specifically in the population age 55+. Monroe's residential makeup is unique to New Jersey in that half live in single-family homes and the other half reside in 12 active adult communities and several assisted living facilities. Residents who live in the adult communities are middle to upper income, educated, retired professionals. The Monroe Township Public Library is located within close proximity to these communities, and their residents comprise 75% of patrons using the library regularly. The library's budget is derived from three sources: local taxes, state aid, and income from gifts and fees. 60% of funds for adult programming come from donations and bequests by residents. This source has been decreasing 5% annually over the past 3 years. The focus of the library's programming budget and technology initiative is on the youth demographic under 18 years old and communication emphasizing crowdsourced media. Over the past year, new adult programs have been added but have not been well attended. Here are the research methods and rationale. Due to no funding in the budget, only informal research methods could be used for developing this plan. Although informal, they were very effective for providing key information about the library's audience and needs. A program survey was used to get program feedback, interests, and communication methods. Observations to show peak times of library usage, to plan programming and resources being sought out. Intercept interviews to determine patron demographics, preferred communication methods, and program interests. Internally, a communication survey among library staff to establish an awareness baseline of public relations role at the library. And fact-finding using staff interviews, U.S. Census data, and municipal documents provided township growth rate, demographic changes, and library budget information. Key research results are shown here. Although patrons overwhelmingly were positive about programs, they were not very likely to take action afterwards, such as talking with friends about it. Observations showed peak times between 10 and 2, Monday through Friday. Interviews with patrons revealed that in-house publications, such as the calendar and flyers, are the main source of communication about library events, not the website. Internally, survey among library staff revealed that although they felt public relations manages the library's reputation well, work needs to be done to improve their understanding of the library's mission, preferably through a monthly meeting. And fact-finding was valuable for providing program attendance trends, budget specifics, and township demographics, specifically that children's programming is outnumbering adult programs by a ratio of 3-1. To derive the problem statement, I took into account these four results. Current programming focuses on a youth age group underserving the township's growing senior population and majority public using the library. The focus on social media-based communication initiatives has created a dysfunctional communication system with the library's most supportive group. Few opportunities for two-way communication among library staff negatively affect value of adult program offerings and overall success of library operations. And declining revenue from gifts is contributing to the reduction of programs offered to the library's patron base. This creates the problem that Monroe Township Public Library programming is not serving the needs of its library users. The goal of this plan is that the Monroe Township Public Library is recognized as a valuable educational resource for library users of all ages. Key publics are Monroe Township seniors 55 plus, Monroe Township Public Library staff, Monroe Township community organizations, families of children, and area businesses. This plan focuses on the Monroe Township seniors age 55 and above. There are four objectives addressed in this plan. The first is that community group collaboration in library programming increases 10% to comprise 40% of adult programming offered by December 31st, 2014. In 2012, roughly one-third of programs were with community groups, averaging 43 patrons per event. The second objective is that seniors' participation in existing library programming increases 20% to average 30 patrons per event by December 31st, 2014. The current average is 24 patrons per event. The third objective is that library staff awareness of the benefits of internal communication to the library's mission increases by 20% by December 31st, 2014. Current awareness is at 65%. The fourth objective looks long-term, where patron donations increase to $5,000 to support the doubling of lecture programs biannually by December 31st, 2015.
Great. And if I could, I'd like to just pause for a moment and have people reflect on these objectives. If they saw these objectives on someone else's plans, what would be your comment that you would give to your colleague who was sharing these objectives? I'm just going to put out a quick question. Are these good objectives? Are these bad objectives? Do you think they're hitting the mark, or are they not? And I think I might bring in Joy and Norita on this as well. Because really, Joy and Norita, I have the impression, every time I see these communication plans, that if the plan is successful, this is the point at which you can tell whether the plan is going to be successful or not. Norita, why don't you comment?
Sure. The objectives, the format, and the intention are spot on. You've done everything with an audience with what to do, think, or feel by a percentage, by a stated timeline. I would be careful about putting in dollar fundraising amounts into an objective. I would instead recommend a specific audience to pledge support instead of actual seeking increases in donation, because with your audiences you're trying to solve communications goals, and fundraising is not a communications goal.
No.
And I like number three a lot, but I personally would increase it by a lot more. I'd want to see that their awareness increase a lot more. You know, internal people should be, as fully aware as possible. So, or unless you think that the awareness isn't that much, it doesn't need to increase by that much.
Yeah, and Gina, I know a little bit about your plan, and that may be something you want to include in your problem statement. Is that? And I realize you don't want to talk too much about internal conflicts, but you can kind of read into number three that you have some disconnect in terms of mission with the internal audiences.
Okay, I was also taking into account, being very realistic, considering the management situation at the library, and that what can actually be done. And considering the situation, it has to be done very incrementally.
And that's perfectly fine. If you know what you're going to be able to measure.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would almost include in your problem statement or your problem materials a little bit about the disconnect between sort of internal audiences and the mission, so that if that is the percentage that you want to that you think is realistic, then just put something into your situation analysis that helps people understand that there is a little bit of a disconnect right now.
Okay.
Joy, do you have any comments?
I agree with Narita I would be careful putting in dollars amounts, because if you don't reach it, you're automatically failing first. But two, is your issue that you don't have people, adults, coming to the library and using the programs and those sorts of things, or is it that you want their money? If you can get them into the library and get involved in the programs and that sort of thing, hopefully their money, their checkbook will follow them into the process. And by stating a dollar amount like that, it's more like you're going after their checkbook first. And oh, by the way, you can come to the programs.
I think my strategies and tactics will shed some more light on that. I specifically put $5,000 because currently we allot $2,500 per lecture. For example, we had one last week, so that's where the $5,000 comes from, is to double these distinguished lecturer programs.
Yeah, I'm so concerned about that. You need to think about that, I would think.
Okay.
The other question I had, and maybe I missed it in the slides, but I don't think I saw a goal in there.
It was the very first. Let
me go back real quick here.
After my research.
Okay.
And the problem statement.
Okay, there it is. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Great. Why don't you go ahead and sort of fill us in on the rest of your plan, and then we'll move on.
Okay, great. A strategy to support the first objective without requiring more money is to create partnerships with community organizations. Tactics include increasing programming with community organizations such as the Monroe Township Cultural Arts Commission, the Office of Aging and Senior Services, regional groups like Princeton Community Healthcare, and state agencies such as the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Next slide, please. Okay. Engaging seniors by offering programming based on their interests supports the objective of increasing senior participation in programs. Survey research revealed that they want more music, scholarly, and film programs. The second strategy to support this objective is to cross-promote library programming. Based on survey results and recent program feedback, tactics include in-house publications, coordinating with library outreach divisions, other departments within the township, such as the town council and senior services, and media releases to local and adult community papers. Fostering communication among library divisions supports the objective of increasing staff awareness about the benefits of communication. Surveys show that while most staff understand that public relations adds value to the library, they are not clear on the library's mission or communication with patrons. Tactics include a monthly meeting, which was the most requested method to increase communication with public relations, as well as an online calendar and group email. Gifts and fees comprise 2% of the budget, roughly $63,000, but support 60% of adult programming. Engaging supporters of library programs through information table and testimonial at library programs, as well as a wealth management seminar are necessary to sustain and expand programming at the library. The messaging, the overall messaging is derived from the library's mission that the Monroe Township Public Library supports lifelong learning and that the Monroe Township Public Library fosters interaction among its diverse community. This timetable shows 18 months from June 2013 to December 2014 that this plan addresses. Evaluation periods are built in to allow for in-process analysis to determine if objectives are being met and if there's need for adjustment. In 2013, key milestones were restructuring of program evaluation process, coordination with organizations in Monroe, and having the first public relations fundraising collaboration at the Silber Lecture. In 2014, key milestones are the rollout of the public relations staff meeting, continuation and increasing of collaboration with community organizations, and fundraising. This evaluation is a snapshot after the Silber Lecture on November 12, 2013, where there were 100 attendees. This is measured against the first objective of community groups collaboration in library program increases 10% to comprise 40% of adult program offered by December 31st, 2014. This was the first time partnering with the Office of Senior Services at their venue. Although attendees overwhelmingly enjoyed the event, there were communication challenges with staff at the event location, which contributed to attendance shortfall, which was 50% lower than expected. The evaluation continues, measured against the second objective, that senior participation in existing library programming increases 20% to average 30 patrons per event by December 31st, 2014. For this lecture, a new survey format was used. Their survey response rate was 54% compared to a 10% response rate during the summer evaluation period. The key measurement was that 7 out of 10 attendees were likely to take action after the programming by discussing it with others. Informal survey was used to informal survey is planned to be used to measure against objective number 3, where library staff awareness of the benefits of internal communication to the library's mission increases 20% by December 31st, 2014. So a survey would be used to compare baseline measurement, determine if new programs are based on research conducted by public relations, and if the new programming is cost effective. The lecture that was last Tuesday, we were able to see the first time doing fundraising with a program. Prior to the lecture, a testimonial was given about the importance of gift giving. Over half of the literature provided was picked up by program attendees. It is yet to be seen if serious inquiries are generated from this tactic. Evaluation against the plan's goal is in progress. Change in behavior taking action after a program has been observed. And this concludes the presentation. Are there any questions?
Well, that's great, and it's clear that you have a good grasp on how to use these communication components. Norita, do you mind starting and just share a little bit of feedback?
Sure. Like last week, my laptop died in the middle of that, and I wasn't able to see the slides, but I could hear what Gina was saying, and I can tell that she has matched up the measurement quite nicely with each of the audiences and the objectives, and demonstrated a very firm grasp of all of the elements of a plan. What I was thinking through on did she address the fundraising in the evaluation?
Yes, that was the final evaluation slide that the tactic was using observation, where we had, this is the first time we had testimonial given at a program, you know, about the importance of gift giving, and literature was provided, and by the end of the program, over half the literature was picked up by program attendees. However, this is just last Tuesday, so I haven't had the opportunity to see whether or not, you know, this tactic is generating serious inquiries.
Sure. What I was thinking through is how we were going after your fundraising as an objective, and what I was thinking through is a way to explain it. Fundraising is definitely a relevant goal for a nonprofit organization. You have to do fundraising, but in the PR plan, you are addressing communications problems, and the thinking is with fundraising, you know, it kind of follows intuitively that, okay, everyone liked what they saw and they expressed their support by giving money. Great, end of story, we're on our way. Well, that's not quite all of it with the communications plan, because theoretically, you could have $1 million. You could shake the money trees, but you don't really know whether or not you solved any communications problems or showed any support for your programs. Or, in the other extreme, is you could have no money, but you still are having a lot of support from patrons, and they're expressing their support, or they're taking action in other ways that shows that you've addressed communications problems. So while obviously for your managers or for your pay have to, you know, present fundraising goals, but for what you do for the readiness review, I would just be careful how you use those in your plans.
Joy, some quick comments?
I like what Narita said, and there's the question about fostering communication within the library staff. How did you say that you are still measuring that?
I plan on rolling that out January 2014, starting with a monthly meeting. Currently, there are no meetings between public relations, myself, and the other divisions. It's a very strict top-down management structure at my organization.
Okay. Your communication with the external publics, what your messaging on that, keeping in mind that your internal audience are also part of the external audience. They watch TV, they read newspapers and magazines and that sort of thing. And they are going to get, I know at in my organization, we have meetings on top of meetings, and many times we get a little bit of information out of them, but they're back-to-back and we're on to something else. But when we're sitting at home in the evening and we see the commercials, or we're scanning the newspaper and we see information about our organization, that's when I start getting feedback from people that say, I didn't realize that we did that. So you may want to try and gather that data as well. Your internal audiences seeing that external communication, and how is that impacting their knowledge base?
Okay.
Yeah, and Gina, I think you're gonna have to be prepared for a lot of questions about your internal audience, because you know, putting on your timeline, the internal audience engagement at the end of your plan is sort of counterintuitive, because the internal audiences are sort of the low hanging fruit in terms of communication engagement. So you should be in your readiness review, you should be prepared for some comments about your internal audiences.
They're also considered, to use a military term that we use in the Navy, it's a force multiplier.
Right.
They talk to their friends out in the community, the librarians, the maintenance people, they talk to people as they are working around the facilities or at the event. So they are also part of your communication team. And they have a lot of impact on people that you may not initially reach.
All right. Well, Gina, we're going to have to leave it there. We've got a lot of great comments in the chat window. I'll send those to you. Thank you very much for that, Gina. We are going to now bring in Lynn Broom. Lynn, are you there?
I'm here.
And Lynn, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time, but we're going to go ahead and go through what we really want you to concentrate on, sort of that foundation of your plan. So let's go ahead and have you go for that.
Okay. I'll just say that my name is Lynn Brunn, and I've been an independent consultant for the past 9 years, specializing in the areas of public health and public K-12 education, both arenas that I worked in before becoming a consultant. In this case study, is largely based on an actual marketing plan I developed for the Minnesota Department of Health Oral Health Program, which wanted an educational campaign to promote the drinking of fluoridated tap water. However, some of the tactics and evaluation components that I'll be presenting reflect my learnings in this APR prep workshop, but I did get permission from the client to share this information with you. And I will just add a caveat that as a consultant, I don't get the chance often to shepherd the entire process, so that that's going to be reflected here in that I don't always get access to how the plan lives out once I've handed it over to the consultant, to the client. So I'm not sure how to handle that with the readiness review. So any input on that as I go through this would be appreciated. So in terms of the situation analysis, the health department has received anecdotal but consistent information from both health workers, that immigrant and refugee communities don't trust that the local tap water is safe. So they are drinking bottled water instead, and as a result are missing out on the protective oral health benefits of fluoridated water. Many are also turning to sugary, high-calorie alternatives, such as soda, that contribute to tooth decay and weight gain. Some, but not all, bottled water contains fluoride, but there are no laws governing that fluoride must be listed as an ingredient. And to explain, fluoride is a mineral that is naturally present in nearly all Minnesota water sources and other water in the U.S. and the world. But fluoride must be maintained at an optimal level by municipal waterworks services in states that have community water fluoridation. And the optimal level is federally mandated by the Health and Human Services. The optimal level maximizes oral health benefits while minimizing possible adverse health effects. Community water fluoridation is a controversial public health strategy and has been since its inception in the 1940s. Water fluoridation is not well understood by the public or even health professionals and waterworks administrators who monitor and control the optimal fluoride levels in drinking water. The controversy persists despite the fact that the CDC declared community water fluoridation as one of the top 10 public health successes of the 20th century for protecting against tooth decay and related health problems. And water fluoridation is really a health equity issue in that it addresses health disparities among low-income, high-risk populations who don't have easy access to regular oral health care, especially children. A popular stance among anti-fluoride groups is that it's forced mass medication, that it's big government controlling their way of life. Some of the false claims that are perpetuated is that fluoride causes cancer, that it's toxic to small children and linked to low IQ in children. Many of the studies cited by anti-fluoride groups are suspect or conducted in China or third world countries where optimal control and monitoring of fluoride is not practiced. In other cases, they will fail to mention relevant facts, such as stating that European countries don't have community water fluoridation, but for instance, in Italy, fluoride is added to table salt rather than the drinking water because of the particularities of their water systems. That doesn't make it cost-effective to add it to the water. Anti-fluoride groups will also exaggerate the prevalence of severe dental and skeletal fluorosis, which is extremely rare in the U.S. and mostly happens in third world countries where there is no infrastructure to control optimal fluoride levels. So the concern for the health department is that these anti-fluoride groups and sentiments could derail or tarnish an education campaign similar to what they've experienced with fears around immunizations in immigrant communities, childhood immunizations. In addition, the health department is unsure to what extent to explicitly promote fluoridated water when it talks about the health benefits of tap water as opposed to bottled water. Other issues and concerns is that the United States Health and Human Services is due to announce any day that the new national recommendations to adjust, and in this case to reduce, the optimal fluoride levels in community water systems. The reason for the change is that there has been a rise in mild dental fluorosis in teens, largely due to the increase in ingestion of other fluoride sources, such as toothpaste and mouthwashes. And mild dental fluorosis is a cosmetic condition that causes white spots on tooth enamel. It is not a threat to one's health. As part of this federal change in optimal fluoridation levels, the health department must conduct a public rules revision process, which is likely to provide anti-fluoride groups with a platform to voice their fluoridation opposition. Additional issues is that at the end of the 2013 Minnesota legislative session, there was a bill presented to repeal Minnesota's community water fluoridation law. While the attempt failed, it could resurface in the 2014 legislative session. Also, the League of United Latin American Citizens is anti-fluoride, and there's a possibility that it could influence the local Hispanic community, a key target audience for the campaign. So moving on to the research phase, a review of scientific studies confirms what local health workers have been noting, that communities fear that the local tap water is not safe and will cause them to become ill, that tap water doesn't taste as good as bottled water, or that it smells, and also that bottled water is just more convenient. And this is formal secondary research, quantitative. I also conducted interviews with other health department staff from different programs that have direct contact with refugee or immigrant communities to determine how they could be enlisted in the education campaign. Health department staff have different touch points with communities, and the potential was there to weave educational messages into their current intervention programs. Part of those interviews were with community health workers who were also enlisted to provide feedback on messaging and visuals. Community health workers educate clients and patients about health issues and help them navigate complex health systems, and they are also members of the cultural community themselves and speak the same language, so they were a good alternative to doing focus groups with ethnic communities. Because we didn't have the budget to do that. So that was informal primary and qualitative research. I also did a review of other tap water campaigns to inform messaging and tactics. So this was informal, primary, and qualitative. The messages that often popped up were safety assurances, oral health benefits, cost savings, healthy weight, hydration for health, and that it's more environmentally friendly. The first three messages are the most relevant to the oral health concerns. Now, here's the part where I start delving into the research that I did not do because the client didn't have the funds to pay me to do it, but I provided this as recommendations as part of my plan for them to carry on this research. So to interview leaders or influencers from ethnic-specific community-based organizations that serve the health needs of the target publics. These interviews could gain further insight on communities' attitudes and behaviors towards tap water consumption and to get a pulse on the organization's receptivity to supporting community water fluoridation. And this would be informal, primary, and qualitative. The next slide, the research on this slide examines the context that needs to be addressed to start building broader community water fluoridation awareness and understanding and support for more long-lasting change in the public perception of water fluoridation. So I did recommend conducting interviews or surveys of waterworks administrators to better understand their level of comprehension of water fluoridation health benefits and their confidence level to handle anti-fluoride complaints. They're usually the folks that get the calls from the public that is anti-fluoride. And these interviews would inform strategies and content for spokespeople training, professional development training for these folks. So this would be informal, primary, and qualitative. While a SWOT and content analysis was not done or initially suggested, I would recommend they do this to identify other ways to expand the organizational and public support, while also better understanding the perceptions and attitudes about community water fluoridation. And the SWOT would be informal, primary, qualitative, content analysis, formal, primary, and quantitative. Problem statement. Immigrant communities are not receiving the oral health benefits of fluoridated tap water because they believe tap water will make them ill and that bottled water is safer, cleaner, better tasting, and more convenient. Further complicating the tap water issue is the controversial and complex nature of community water fluoridation, which could negatively impact a drink tap water campaign. The goal is immigrant and refugee communities choose to drink Minnesota tap water over bottled water and sugar-sweetened beverages. Audiences. The primary audience are immigrant and refugee communities, Hispanic, East African, which is Somalian, Oromo, Hmong, and the Karen community, the latest refugee community from Myanmar, Burma. Also high-risk communities of color, African American, American Indian. Secondary audiences are those with direct contact or influence with primary audiences, so leaders from the CBOs, leaders from government agencies and collaboratives who advocate on behalf of immigrants and communities of color, community health workers and educators, providers, so dentists, dental hygienists, primary physicians, pediatric physicians, and such. And then tertiary audience are those having direct contact with the general public on the community water fluoridation issues, so the waterworks administrators, superintendents, directors, and district engineers. Getting to the objectives, next slide. And just to point out, from here on out, I'm focusing on the Hispanic community specifically. Short-term objective, by May 1, 2016, 1 year after the educational campaign ends, at least 50% of Hispanic respondents will report having switched to drinking tap water over bottled water the majority of the time. The long-term objective is within 3 years of the campaign launch, 99% of agencies serving the Hispanic community will support community water fluoridation publicly and embed drink tap water interventions into their programs. And these objectives really address two sides of the same coin to maximize impact. The short-term objective addresses the attitudes and behaviors of the target audience, while the long-term objective addresses the sustainability, since marketing campaigns are expensive and difficult to sustain over time. The organizational support of community water fluoridation is really what is going to help secure long-term community change. So the three-year mark allows for the fact that many organizations will need to vet water fluoridation support at a policy level, which takes more time. Getting to the strategies, step five, first one is to conduct a drink tap water public awareness campaign through popular Hispanic media channels and events. And two, to gain the community water fluoridation support of agencies serving the Hispanic community so they will embed the drink water tap water interventions into their programming. The main message is that Minnesota tap water is safe, tastes good, and helps prevent cavities. The sub-message is that Minnesota tap water is fluoridated to help protect teeth from cavities. You'll note that fluoride, fluoridation is a term and a concept not known by, even known or heard. They don't even have that term, many immigrants, in their language for it. So it's more of a sub-message. We did want to have it somewhere in the messaging because we need to raise awareness that fluoridation is a good thing. Then we're getting onto tactics. Michael, do you want me to skip the tactics?
Yeah, I don't. I don't really want you to skip, but what, if you would just sort of mention your strategies, and then we can see your tactics there and the spokespeople in the budget. And this will be we publish all of the slides, so this will be available for you online for you to review. Obviously, we're also recording it. So why don't you go ahead and share your strategy so we can get just through the whole thing.
Yeah, the Drink Tap Water campaign is really about getting the messages in front of folks more at a community level, so doing newspaper ads and radio PSAs in the Hispanic media. And then because we didn't have much of a budget, We wanted to do some short informational video PSAs because we know that could have a lot of legs and would be very helpful, especially with new immigrants, and would last a very long time. But we don't have the money to broadcast it on the Hispanic media stations, but it's something CBOs could put on their websites, the state health department could put on website, and some cable access places might also broadcast for free. And my favorite part is the portable water station, and there's a little picture there. The city of Minneapolis also had a water campaign, and their plumber made this water station because there's nothing like it out there in, to buy, and they were, after I spoke with them, they were willing to actually build these for the health department. And it's something they bring to community events, and they're little just fountains, and it's the orange bucket is filled with ice, and they just hook it up to a water hydrant. They have to do some testing to make sure there's no contaminants coming out of the hydrant. But, again, this could have a lot of legs. So bringing it to popular festivals during the summer months, Cinco de Mayo, and other summer events for the Hispanic community. And then the other strategy is to, gaining the CBO's support. And that's about coalition building, face-to-face meetings with agency leaders to secure the board resolutions. And, part of that is producing a community water fluoridation education toolkit to, like, a fact sheets, FAQs, that sort of thing, to leave as a leave behind. And then in terms of embedding the tap water interventions in their programming, we would have community health workers train their staff in folding in messaging and providing them with flyers and posters to put around their agency and to give to clients as they come through. So that's, I think that gets at the heart of the strategies there. The timeline for the public campaign, the education campaign, it's a year-long campaign starting in May through next April, really focusing on those hot summer months where we can get more exposure with the portable water station and whatnot. But for the coalition building, that's a longer, more protracted time, 3 years, and we'd be starting right now, or yesterday really, to start building that support with agencies because they are the direct contact. I mean, the health department has some direct contact with the communities, but the CBOs really are the trusted leaders. They have ongoing contact at a different level, and it adds to the touch points. Next slide, I think we can go to the evaluation. I had a bit of a conundrum here because, but basically the evaluation for the education campaign comes down to a pre-survey before someone goes through the intervention of what their attitudes and behaviors are around water consumption. And then to measure the effectiveness of the campaign, I thought, really doing kind of cohorts or batches. So doing surveying folks that have gone through the intervention 6 months into the media campaign, and then at the 12 months at the very end of the campaign, and then again 1 year after the campaign completion, I think would be a good idea to do, because really the folks who are coming through the pipeline and getting the intervention like 6 months into the educational campaign will have also been probably exposed to the media campaign and not just the intervention. So I thought that staggering the evaluation in this way might give a better sense of kind of the long-lasting impact. I don't know whether that's, you know, I'd love input on that. But then moving on to the long-term objective, that really, to me, is about securing board resolutions, like on supporting community water fluoridation for the CBOs. So, you know, the community-based organizations, they have boards of directors, and if they can pass a resolution and embed it at a policy level that they are on record as supporting community water fluoridation, that would help to combat the anti-fluoride folks and agencies out there, and kind of start a sort of a swell of support within the community and across the community, that, again, can help with sustaining the value and support around community water fluoridation that we need, because media campaigns, you know, are costly. So I think that pretty much sums it up.
Okay, that's fantastic. Excellent job, Lynn. That's a fantastic job. And actually, there were a lot of great comments, and I know that you were able to see some of them, but not all of them. And there really were some great comments, and most of the comments have been very, very positive about your approach. You obviously have a really strong background and understand strategically how all of these things come together. Let's get some quick comments from Norita and Joy, and I do want to address your initial question, and that is, if you design and build a communication plan and then hand it off to an organization, how can that be used in a readiness review? And my sense is, and I'm going to start with Joy on this. My sense is that it's perfectly fine, because the communication planning process is what the readiness review panel is looking for. They're not, although it's nice to have the follow through and the implementation data, it's really the communication planning that's important. Joy?
I think it is usable, and it gives you an opportunity if the organization you give the communications plan to, if they don't follow the plan or they put it on the shelf, which many people do, they'll say, great plan, put it in a binder, shove it on the shelf, and never look at it again. Hopefully they won't do that. I think you can use it as your plan. It gives you an opportunity to say, this is what I presented them. This is what they did with it. Given the opportunity, I might have tweaked X, Y, and Z to more fully fulfill the objectives of the plan. So what you may need to do is monitor what happens after you turn it over to the new owners, per se, and say, okay, the owners have it. This is what they're doing. At this point in the plan, I would do X, Y, Z.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Norita, do you have some comments?
I don't know that I totally agree with Joy. I don't disagree. I think it's certainly fair to say that you could have a plan that didn't include all of the perfect things and all of the evaluations and measurements, as long as you can demonstrate your full understanding of them and what you would have done. I am not so sure about a plan that's just simply handed off and you don't participate in any of the implementation, because I think that a panel wants to see what your experience was in doing the work, and that you have the experience necessary for accreditation. So I'm a little unsure totally at this juncture.
Great. Does that help you with some feedback, Lynn?
It does, but it doesn't. I'm still kind of in that limbo land as to whether or not I could even use this as a case study.
I would defer to a chapter APR chair.
Okay.
I would cover it off as early as possible with. If it were me and I were in that position, I would be going over that with the APR chair on what your plans are and getting in.
To me, the bigger question, too, is, like, how much of a hypothetical can you use for a readiness review? Or you know what I mean? It's at the beginning, I don't know if it was Joy or you, Narita, that said something about, you know, the ability to use hypotheticals or... in the readiness review, or if it all has to be something that you actually presented or did.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be a real plan. Yeah, it's supposed to be a real plan. Yeah, I mean,
I agree with Narita that you should talk to your chair, Ken. I think with some discussion with them on what is in the art of the doable and what they would want to see as backup for your KSAs.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Well, and you may even be able to maybe step back in and do some follow-up in the plan later. Maybe they'll invite you to come back and do some analysis as the plan is implemented. So, well, good luck with that, Lynn.
Yep.
That's excellent.
And thank you.
We do need to call an end. We have gone a little bit late tonight, but I think it was important. We did have some great plans that we've seen this evening. We do want you to check on your progress as you're going through the online course. We've gotten some great feedback from many of you in the session here. For example, these activities are not in order and things of that nature. But you can also check these activities. You can click on an activity and go back to it to review the activity, or you can see comments there. So feel free to check on your progress. Also, if you would like to get a completion certificate, if you have completed all of the activities, done the milestones, you can apply for a completion certificate. We prefer it if you have actually taken the examination and you have gotten your APR, so that we can give you a certificate with the APR included. You can just request that either via email or fill out the form that is on the course map for your completion certificate. We do want you to consider coming back in the springtime, especially if you're not ready to take the examination. We want you to come back and be a part of the group. We want you to invite other people to come back. We really enjoy having a good group of people with us in these sessions. And speaking of good group of people, we've got a great panel tonight. Joy and Narita, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Always a pleasure.
And please
anytime,
do...
Anytime, Michael.
Great. Thank you so much. And please do thank both Lynn and Gina in the chat window. Let them know how much you appreciate being able to look deeply into their communication planning process and really help them with some chat messages. And I will send those comments to both Gina and Lynn. And thank you both very much for being with us this evening. You can also get the web archive recordings. We're going to take a break between now and the spring session, but you can feel free to stay in touch. There are lots of recordings there, especially recordings based on the RPIE process, and there are also slides, PDFs of slides, and also audio recordings of all of those as well. The next cohort starts soon, so please stick with us if you'd like to check your progress. And thank you all very much. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.